Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you remember reading somewhere in the Bible that God will give us wisdom if we would only take the time to ask. Well, yes, my friend, there is such a verse. Actually, the Bible talks quite a bit about wisdom, especially in the book of Proverbs. But the specific verse you're referring to is found in the book of James, chapter 1, verse 5. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. So yes, the verse is in there, but still you wonder how many people actually take God up on this special offer. Or to articulate an even greater curiosity, where is this wisdom from God today? Is there evidence that anybody is asking for it? We live in such contradictory times, don't we? Regarding the whole COVID-19 thing, who is being wise? Who's being foolish? Accusations of both go back and forth from different camps. Who should we trust? Who should we believe? To the naked eye, it doesn't seem like wisdom is in such great supply. Well, my friend, sometimes God gives us wisdom, but we choose to ignore it, just as people often ignore the brain itself, also from God. Sometimes the truth is right in front of us. A lot has happened these past 5 months. We've been on lockdowns, followed by reopenings, which barely seemed like real honest-to-goodness reopenings. But whatever they were, they didn't last long anyway, because the reopenings became reclosings. Churches are beginning to exhibit civil disobedience, but only some churches. Others are continuing to comply and scolding those who do the civil disobedience. Meanwhile, citizens outside of church are also involving themselves with civil disobedience, rallying for the government to completely reopen. Salon owners and gym owners have been opening business, defying public orders, getting arrested. State and local municipalities are cracking down, all in the name of concern for our safety. And yet, many of these same state and municipal governments are ordering police to stand down in the midst of other kinds of protests. And these are not peaceful ones. Police are being ordered to stand down while buildings are being set on fire. Police are being ordered to stand down while rioters are looting stores and people are being pulled out of their cars and beaten to a pulp while people are being murdered. Police are still being ordered to stand down. This about face from our government speaks volumes. So now it's clear. Now you know that in many cases, in many cities, in many states, it was never about your safety. Now you know this is about power. At least you should know. Everyone in the country should know and could know, but they don't. At least half the country, if not more, is still paralyzed by fear. Some at least are starting to wake up, however. Today I present a retrospective program because back in April, far fewer were waking up and even fewer had never gone to sleep at all. Yes, some of us never went to sleep at all. Admittedly, none of us, nobody back then knew as much about the mysterious coronavirus as they could, not even the doctors. The doctors were all over the map. But we still knew a lot about human nature. Human nature from power-hungry politicians, easy to predict. Sheep who follow without question are also easy to predict. I am going to replay a monologue from one of my broadcast shows in April. The monologue was put together in an interesting way. It had an interesting little history. I first wrote it as a Facebook post on April 26, 2020. Back then, a lot of us were living on Facebook. Where else could we go? What else could we do? Well, that same evening, because radio at least was considered an essential service, so I was still allowed to drive out to the radio station once a week. And other than going to the store or the bank, that was about the only place I could drive to. That same evening, on the Bob Siegel Show's local broadcast in San Diego, an audio version of that same Facebook post was broadcast. Then not long after, on May 1st, I was asked to be a speaker at a peaceful rally in downtown San Diego with a bullhorn, and I and three others with this bullhorn gave short speeches in front of the crowd gathered at Justice Hall. A small portion of the points from my radio monologue were used in that same outdoor speech. Days later, the original Facebook post was turned into an article and published by Communities Digital News, May 3rd, 2020. Shortly after, it was listed as a top conservative news headline by The Writing. The Writing, R-I-G-H-T-I-N-G, is a liberal news outlet that alerts people to articles from conservatives that are gaining traction. So why am I replaying this audio version today? Several reasons. First, its satirical, playful style resonated with many people, causing them to think about all that had been going on. In short, it helped people wake up. More importantly, while April was only a few months ago, it seems longer. It seems like decades since we've been living under these draconian regulations. It seems impossible to imagine anymore what life was like when it was normal. And so I believe there is always value in looking back. I believe there is always value in measuring progress. The progress barometer has been two sides of one coin. We have made a lot of progress in terms of what we now know about COVID-19 and how to treat it. We've made zero progress in terms of government overreach, political exploitation, and the fanned flames of fear thanks to the mainstream media. All we can do is fight back with alternative media. Thank God there's a lot of alternative media. Here is my small contribution. From The Bob Siegel Show, April 26, 2020. First, they told us that unless we had serious preconditions, only people above 70 years of age were in danger of losing their lives. For others, it may not be much worse than a mild case of the flu or a bad cold. Many will not even feel symptoms at all. Okay, good reasons to protect our senior citizens, but for everyone else, nothing to worry about. Yeah, you know, if you fall within that precarious age or risk factor, just be careful. So long as you keep yourselves isolated, there will be no problem, just for a while. Just until we can get this thing under control. Then retirement homes made the decision on behalf of its residents. They were ordered not to leave the premises. In time, the decision was out of the hands of the retirement communities. It became a matter of executive order in many places. After that, our education increased. Now, whoa, and behold, the risk age is actually 65 and older. Oh, and, well, it can sometimes be real nasty and life-threatening, even in your 50s or 40s, but certainly not in your 30s, unless it is. Because, you see, what we're trying to say is a few serious cases have popped up with that age bracket, too, but children can't get this. Children can't get this. Probably not. Well, maybe they can, but they shouldn't feel symptoms. And since they could still be carriers, keep them away from grandma and grandpa. Meanwhile, the general instructions for being out in public were ever so helpful. Simple, too. A piece of cake. Just wash your hands, they say with a smile. Wash your hands after shaking hands with another. Oh, and don't put your hands near your mouth or eyes. Don't do that after shaking hands, because it is through the mouth or eyes that you can contract the disease. Got it. Roger, just wash my hands and I won't catch this. Easy peasy. Who couldn't follow those simple, reasonable suggestions? But wait, there's more. Now it changes to, well, actually, don't shake hands at all. Instead, that fun but polite elbow bump will be sufficient. Oh, and don't worry about surfaces, just people. This thing doesn't live on surfaces, at least not long enough that we should be concerned, at least as far as we know. Next, I'll give you three guesses and the first two don't count. Yes, sweet Virginia, we heard that COVID-19 actually can live on surfaces longer than we first thought. Could be hours and hours upon hours, and maybe even upon hours, according to some doctors. But there's no need to wear a mask. In fact, we strongly urge you not to wear a mask unless you're infected, because people who are infected don't need them. Doctors need them to treat infected people, but nobody else needs them. Besides, the average yokel doesn't know how to wear masks. They touch them too much. They adjust them too much. They take them off. They scratch themselves, which means the eyes and the mouth are in danger again. Later, hey, that elbow bump thing isn't going to work either. Instead, we must ask you to socially distance yourselves by staying 6 feet apart in the stores or the workplaces. Throughout these ever-morphing tips, the federal government task force is talking in terms of guidelines. States and cities, taking their cues from Washington, also issue guidelines. But it didn't take long for that to change as well. In many places, what started as a guideline one day became an executive order the next day. Gary Guideline and his cousin Danny Decree continued to watch our populace like hawks, wondering what else they could do to disrupt the normal in order to save more lives. In no time at all, they came up with this fun little gem. No gatherings of more than 35. And of course, within those gatherings, social distance yourselves. That's 6 feet apart, bucko. 5.5 won't cut it. Still later. Well, actually, we just assume you don't have gatherings at all. Instead, everyone should stay at home, no matter what age you are, because you never know if you're a carrier. So even if you feel good, no, even if you feel great, stay home. Businesses that could have their people work at home did so. Businesses that could not work from home were shut down or severely curtailed. Stores and other essential services were allowed to stay open, so long as people practice social distancing 6 feet apart. Churches were told to stop meeting if they had over 35 people. Then they were told to stop meeting, period. Many said it didn't matter. After all, we can meet on Zoom. Some people tried drive-in church services. They were ticketed and threatened with arrest. By now, it became clear that you could be a lot farther than 6 feet apart and still be in trouble. People were arrested on beaches, even if they were the only one on the beach. People were commanded to vacate parks, refrain from riding horses on a horse trail. They were pulled over by police and hassled if taking a drive, unless the car was headed toward an essential service, even if it was one person in the car. In the meantime, we were assured that probably, hopefully, maybe, this would only last 15 days. You bet! The 15-day plan, we can do this, right? Yeah, we can do that! Then it became 30 days until the end of April. The important thing was to flatten the curve. Flatten the curve. Flatten the curve. Again, these are guidelines from Washington, but the local states and municipalities keep adding teeth, extremely sharp teeth. In Michigan, people were told that they could buy food in one part of the store, but furniture and gardening sections in the other part of the store would be closed. They were also told that if they owned two homes in the state, they could not drive from one to the other. Heck, they weren't even allowed to visit other family members. Sounds like we hit rock bottom at this point. It wasn't rock bottom. Not even close. The very same professionals who assured us repeatedly and emphatically that we did not need masks decided to revisit the subject. Say, you know what? We strongly suggested you wear a mask after all. We got new information. But also, we were always concerned because we were afraid we would run out of masks for our doctors. Those are both valid reasons, so just go with the one that makes the most sense. Yeah, wear the mask, but also be sure to socially distance. The whole mask deal ends up confusing people. In some places, it's requested. In other places, it's required. And in still other places, people get arrested for not wearing masks. Meanwhile, those previously arrested for real crimes like rape are released from jail for the exact same reason: social distancing. In the midst of this seemingly endless fog, one or two questions occasionally surface, much like the child who notices the emperor isn't wearing any clothes. But if we're socially distancing 6 feet apart, why do we need a mask? And conversely, if we're wearing a mask, why do we need to socially distance? Or let's say we accept both the mask and the 6 feet social distance thing. If essential services can stay open with masks and social distancing, why can't all other businesses just promise to do the same and keep themselves 6 feet apart? Here's another question. If fast food restaurants, liquor stores, and marijuana stores can have drive-through, why can't churches have drive-through? Another question. Aren't people 6 feet apart if they are alone in their cars? Aren't people more than 6 feet apart taking a drive by themselves or being the only surfer on the beach? And if they are alone in their cars, why do they have to wear masks? And if they are going for a walk around the block, why do they have to wear masks? Meanwhile, another part of the story had changed without us even remembering exactly where on the timeline. Now we're hearing this virus could be in the air. And when we get home from the store, we should not only wash our hands and throw out our grocery bags, we should strip down to the garage, come inside, and take a shower. That still might not be enough, according to the World Health Organization. Now we need to go and look in families to find those people who may be sick and remove them and isolate them in a safe and dignified manner. Oh, I gotcha. Now they will invade your home, but only in a dignified manner. Thank goodness for that, at least. Granted, WHO regulations are not binding on our country, but how many American politicians are in bed with WHO and condemn criticism of WHO as though the organization were a sacrament? Will there be more? Of course there will be more! Other fun ideas are in the works. Ideas such as designing drones to roam the sky and read our body temperature to see if we might be needing special isolation and or to see if we are violating whatever shelter-in-place mandate might be in effect in that particular city or state. How about this one? Placing a track on our cell phones to see if we're traveling to any place other than an essential service. Again, only to protect our health. And while rules multiply faster than the virus itself, the goalpost continues to move. Now, as we approach May, some states are increasing their lockdown measures, doubling down instead of lightening up. Others are opening up, but slowly, slowly, ever so slowly, making it fairly clear that phrases such as social distancing are going to be with us for a very long time. So will government-regulated restaurants, theaters, planes, churches. Oh, wait! Sorry, almost forgot. Come fall, there will likely be a fresh outbreak of COVID-19, they tell us. What then? Return to shelter in place? Small and large businesses closing down again? Church services resuming again? But what about next winter, flu season, same dong and dance? Some politicians are saying we cannot open up until we develop a vaccine. Gee, Wally, I thought it was about flattening the curve. No, whoever said anything about a flattened curve, a vaccine, silly. Well, not to be outdone, other politicians have even said we must wait for the disease to become completely eradicated. Reality check. We may never develop a vaccine. The disease may never be eradicated. And even those optimistic doctors who see it in the horizon go out of their way every night on the news to assure us that one way or the other, it will not happen anytime soon. I know, we've heard it day after day. All guidelines are based on the information we had at the time. When the information changes, we have to change the guidelines. So be it. I don't blame President Trump or his medical task force for making mistakes. I don't blame any of the sincere doctors. I both understand and accept that information gets challenged in the face of new data. But my friends, this information does not simply change. It goes back and forth. It contradicts. Every time a potential healing agent drug is given a favorable report, someone else says it didn't test well. This drug works. No, it doesn't work. Yeah, well, it worked here. Or how about this one? Once you get over coronavirus, you develop an immunity and will use that plasma to make a remedy full of natural antibodies. Well, maybe not, because maybe those who recover it can get it again. We're really not actually sure. We hear of states who flattened the curve by obeying all the shutdown rules. Other states flattened the curve without the shutdowns. Still others, despite the flattened curve, are in no great hurry to let people to go back to work. We heard originally that this disease was going to be gargantuan in the amount of deaths it produced. Now we hear that the disease probably came to America sooner than we think, probably back in December, that far more people have had it than we realize, which means that these people apparently didn't know they had it. And if they didn't know they had it, it could only have been a mild case if they were feeling anything at all, and they must be over it by now. As the amount of cases goes up, the amount of death percentages goes down, and the latest estimates, once we figure out how many actually had it, if we had any, we're now less than 1%. Other studies suggest the disease will spread no matter what we do, but also run its course quickly if we don't stretch it out with all the sheltering. Okay, nobody is sure. Medical science is not perfect. Learning about a virus can be a long, tumultuous process. Again, fine. Again, we get it. But here's the bottom line. If we can admit that we are unsure about the virus, we must also admit that it was a mistake to close down our entire country while we were trying to figure it out. It's not like we haven't had viruses without vaccines before. While we waited with bated breath for the elusive, perfect solution, the economy was decimated. 27 million jobless claims. 1 in 4 businesses 2 months or less away from closing permanently as of April 3rd. How much has that changed in the month? But Bob, what else can we do? Should we really be talking about rights and jobs when lives are at stake? What is the balance? What is the solution? The balance, quite simply, is realizing that this is not a choice between the economy on one side and human lives on the other side. Neither is it a choice between our Constitution on one side and human lives on the other side. Human lives will be lost on both sides. I say this quite soberly, quite measuredly. I myself am over 65. I've told you this. I also have asthma, one of the preconditions. Never think for a moment that I do not take COVID-19 seriously. I am very aware that the figure of under 1% death is no consolation to a grieving family. Yes, of course, even one life is one too many. But ladies and gentlemen, lives are being lost on the other side too. It sounds so easy to simply obey our physicians and civil servants who supposedly have nothing but our goodwill in mind. Yeah, all we have to do is stay at home and watch Netflix. That's not so hard, is it? Yeah, well, people who lost their jobs can't afford Netflix. They can't afford food and rent either. As for people who can work at home on their computer over the internet, that sounds great. So remember that schools are closed down too, and daycare centers. How are parents supposed to watch their kids and homeschool their kids and work at their careers at the same time? What about abusive parents? What about abusive spouses? That's not exactly a blissful shelter-in-place arrangement. Depression and suicide are on the rise during this, not to mention the question of whether or not there will be any economy to return to at all when we finally get released to the great outdoors. We've seen what happens in countries whose economies crash, putting aside the obvious, such as higher poverty, rise of crime, vandalism, shortage of police protection. There's also the stress factor of people suddenly out of work, wondering how they will feed their own families. This observation is not an antithesis to medical concern. The medical community has been telling us for years how often stress contributes to serious illness. Speaking of the medical community, another obvious observation. The economy of the medical community itself is affected every bit as much when the surrounding economy crashes. The medical community does not exist in isolation. When the medical business is at risk, everyone's health is at risk. Doctors themselves are out of work right now. Did you know that? Many of them were put on furlough. While coronavirus has sucked all the oxygen out of the country, Americans with other health challenges have been left out in the cold. To make room for the much anticipated but seldom realized COVID-19 patients, hospitals were emptied and cleared. States ordered the discontinuation of non-essential procedures. Now, you want to know what a non-essential procedure is? Well, it's not just having a canker sore removed or having a toenail removed. They include on the list of non-essential hip replacements, cancer screening, biopsies for tumors, treatments for those with heart disease or strokes, blood pressure monitoring. They say 80% of brain surgery cases have been temporarily suspended. At the end of the day, we don't know how many will die of coronavirus. Again, the stats suggest that when all said and done, it'll be less than 1%. Could the stats prove to be wrong in time? Yes, again, It's an unknown virus. But here's what is not unknown. We know what the obliteration of the economy leads to. We know politicians, once given a taste of unchecked power, do not give it back easily. They enthusiastically subscribe to the adage, never let a good crisis go to waste. Many of them have openly, shamelessly admitted this. They do so in front of cameras. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is news. How many human lives are you willing to sacrifice for the sake of the economy? That's how the question always goes. Tonight, I want to put that question right back in the other direction. How many lives are you willing to sacrifice if we don't do away with these draconian measures, allow people to leave their homes and go back to work? And along with the lives, how many dreams and livelihoods are you willing to see go up in smoke? How much rationed health care would you like to see for the rest of your lives? How much more of our Constitution would you like to see violated? How many freedoms are you willing to give up simply because we have a virus without a vaccine? So much for the balance. Here's the solution. We have two choices. Solution one, we can throw up our hands and continue to go along with the shutdown, social distancing, shelter-in-place orders, knowing full well our economy and former way of life will be completely destroyed, and our Constitution will no longer be worth the paper it is printed on, less valuable than the toilet paper people stand in long lines for. Or solution two, the doctors and government can treat us like adults. They can just say, if you are at risk, be careful, maybe stay at home. You can go where you want, but go at your own risk. Meanwhile, washing hands and using good hygiene is always a good idea. But remember, life is always going to include risk. If you run a business or church or airline, you can arrange seating any way you want. Just understand that some people will choose to go to a place that might be better spaced than yours. Your choice, their choice. We cannot guarantee how many lives might be lost due to COVID-19 if we open the country back up immediately, but we do know this. A lot more lives will be lost if we don't open up. Our quality of life and Constitution will also be gone with the dust if we don't allow people the right to travel, vacation, worship, assemble, and shop in the manner they choose. And if you disagree with that, take it up with our forefathers. Our Constitution does not have a coronavirus clause. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.